essence, of course, meant that was the end of Lincoln. Discussions with Dr. McIntosh indicated that, now this was done incidentally, the issuance of the statement was done when Dr. McIntosh was absent from campus and I was acting president, and that since the charge to the committee was to maintain and to consider with the president, I was acting president, they would consider with me, but they refused to do so. They refused to see me. Dr. McIntosh asked that the committee meet with me, that was in July of 66. They refused to meet with me, and so as a consequence of that, I resigned and simply said that. McIntosh asked me then, well, would you continue for the year while we search for a replacement? And he had many arguments about my maintaining it, he would support me, etc. I had talked with people at the Chancellor's office and found out that in terms of support, the San Jose case was such as they would agree with the committee on that, and that further they would agree with the statement or memorandum that the committee had issued, which was tantamount, you see, to disbarring me from being a candidate for the vice presidency. Under those conditions, I resigned, accepted then the position in later in the year, the position as resident director in Sweden for the year 67, so that I would be acting vice president 66-67, and then leave the campus, which I thought was a good idea to get myself out of any conflict and let whoever took the position have free hand. So I was gone the 2 years then, when Dr. Simonson became the academic vice president, or vice president for academic affairs, as you know. So the Metzger thing had personal consequences. Didn't have much consequences in terms of the campus in respect to what happened. Eventually they decided to develop two departments in management, and one with Gregory and others associated with Gregory on one side, and Metzger and others associated with Metzger on the other, in the dual department, which did come up when it was decided by the dean, Dean Marsak, that the two departments should be merged since they were managing. And a conflict ensued. The irony of it is that Metzger, Professor Metzger and Professor Gregory were then allies against Dean Marsak in the new incident on this particular case. The case itself had personal consequences, it had minor campus consequences. It allowed some of the faculty to charge the administration with precipitous action, and of not permitting, as according to AAUP rules, not permitting the person accused to have hearing. McIntosh's, and my position too for that matter, was that there was an opportunity for a hearing which was not provided by the faculty because they refused to take action on it. And to the contrary, you see, their statement to the effect that nothing could be done over the summer and that they would resume in the fall, the resumption in the fall, since it had three, almost 4 months opportunity for action in the spring semester, and in 4 months, 3.5 months, had not taken any action except to agree that they wouldn't report to the Academic Senate, or report, actually, that no action had been taken to the Academic Senate, for clear evidence. There is also the other fact that once the action had been taken, then it was necessary to have a hearing which was held. In other words, the faculty's position, the pro-Metzger's position, was that it was prejudicial that having been fired, that was prejudicial. Because, but you cannot have a case. I was trying, you see, to get it around so that it would not be prejudicial. That is, in other words, the faculty would assume a responsibility to judge vis-a-vis their colleagues without any prejudice, without any action being taken, but that they propose some sort of deviation, knowing that the long-term conflict, personal conflict between Professors Metzger and Gregory could never be resolved. Nevertheless, they might be able to come up with some fruitful possibilities. In terms of the violation of Professor Metzger's rights to hearing or legal recourse, that was never intended, nor was it possible. Because if it weren't on campus, it would be at the Chancellor's office, because the Chancellor's office would have to hold a hearing anyway. We would hopefully hold a hearing before the Chancellor's office got it. So this has been a sore point in terms of not myself, because I spent two, except for students in rebellion in Sweden, I spent two delightful years in Sweden, and I've enjoyed my period, and I had my experience of 6 years as an academic officer. I was delighted to return to the classroom. It has been, I think, recognized now that in this and many other instances that my attempt as an officer of the administration was to try to prevent or to remove problems and cases or conditions that, well, there's an example of that. So far as the AUP is concerned, they were requested to investigate the matter. The first response of the AUP was that the individual did not have hearing. I have evidence later, upon more reflection and upon more evidence being provided, that their position has altered to this, that the hearing was not provided in optimum condition, which was on campus, by reason of its escalation. In other words, a kind of retreat of the AUP, the position, the central office of the AUP. Then secondly, that I've had other individuals who were deeply involved in the case apologize to me for actions which they took at that time. I don't need justice. It doesn't matter to me, because it's past water under the bridge. But the campus has been full of these things from practically the very inception of the campus to the present time. The Metzger case, supposedly an instance of deprivation of faculty of their rights under statute or code, under trustee regulations and under the provisions of the AEP. I think in most instances they have had their rights, and some no. I mean, for example, I mentioned before the music department. We just simply took the rights of self-governance and their independence, in a sense, away from the music department, in some instances away from the math department, because of faculty intransigence and faculty conflict, and in some instances actual persecution, harassment of faculty members. to take the rights away because of these, later to have them reconferred again when things do settle down. It's not an easy campus, as you probably found out.
Well, I found out.
In reading and going through the material.
I don't have that to compare it to.
No. Well, most campuses have their little individual squabbles, but the degree of schism and of the continuance of the conflict, this is something a bit unusual. Now, I've seen it elsewhere, where members of the faculty would not talk one to the other. They wouldn't even say good morning to one. This is Vanderbilt. I mean, I was astounded and asked, why doesn't Professor so-and-so say good morning to me? Oh, and they laughed. They told me the history of this kind of thing. Well, those do occur, but the greater commitment is to the institution, and if not to the institution, or plus, maybe, the department. These loyalties, these commitments outweigh individual conflicts. But the campus, despite its conflicts, is quite a campus. I'm proud to have been a member of it.
Carl Hackintosh has been involved kind of in the background of
so much of this. Yes, past president.
I wonder if we could talk about him.
Well, everybody, well, not everybody, a lot of people have been curious as to how I could get along with Hackintosh. And I explained to them rather simply that what many of them did not recognize was that in principles, they could not, if they were principled and agreed to principles, they could not disagree with Dr. Hackintosh's principles. They were, they're the standard kinds of things, the things that one would have to accept. Where there is my problem with working with Dr. Hackintosh, I think in only two instances in 6 years did I ever have a conflict, basic conflict with Dr. Hackintosh. Those conflicts were on means rather than principles. I agreed with him in principle. We had many, many discussions. I'll never forget one of the times when I felt I had to call in a colleague, and I called in Dr. Malam. We went into the president's office and talked to him about the matter. And, thank God for Malam's quick wit. He came up with this one. He says, Dr. Hackintosh, he said, you know, have you ever tried to push a rope up a hill? And Dr. Hackintosh, he was a Westerner, as you know, quite familiar with lariats and ropes and so forth, looked at Dr. Malam for a moment and laughed. He said, you can't do it. I understand your point. All right, I'll back off. And very simple. I've been in, you know, going this way. It was means, though. You know, what you're going to do. One of the things he did, which I was then and still am enormously appreciative of, is that he did not have anybody between himself and the faculty when he came in 59. Not until I came did he have someone to work with the faculty. He couldn't use the people that were here. The faculty wouldn't talk to him. The faculty wouldn't sit down with him. Wouldn't do anything with him. They wouldn't even say good morning to them. So he then put me in a position where I was virtually independent in academic matters, personnel, planning, curriculum, in many respects, budget. The overall budget was Hackintosh's responsibility, but its dispersion, working with the committees and so forth, very supportive all the way along. As I say, there was only a couple of times where I felt that there was any conflict between us, and only one time when I ever felt that Dr. McIntosh let me down, and I think maybe I was part responsible for it. That was on organization, because what I did is to provide, ask if it was possible to provide a copy of his plan for reorganization, and it was approved. Unfortunately, I interpret this as access to the report on the part of the, what was the organization of the college committee. And that, his view was he had not given it. So again, we're talking about means, you see, not really principle. And he was very upset. And I withdrew from the committee, resigned from the committee, withdrew from the committee because of this. And they continued their work on, and eventually, in working directly with McIntosh, came up with a compromise plan, but one which was pretty much what McIntosh had laid out in his plan. He was a good guy to work with. I never felt close to him. He was here at least, saturated with faculty and complaints and so on right at the beginning, and that he had a good deal of sympathy for Peterson and the members of the administration who were so roundly condemned. A sympathy for them, not a support of them, but a sympathy for them. He did not feel that the faculty should carry on a vendetta beyond that point. That put him in a very bad position. So he was isolated, and he isolated himself from talks with him, for instance, in terms of people in his previous dozen years as president of Idaho State at Pocatello, and talk with people who were at Pocatello at the time. He had a lot of friends and good spirit on the part of the faculty. And he had friends among the faculty. Well, of course, he was also a member of the faculty before he became president. That might have been the difference, you see. He came here as president. The other thing, which both of us felt, and he in particular stressed, was that the chain of command was all downward. In other words, there was supposed to be delegation of authority to the president. Well, in quite a wide array of matters, that delegation of authority never was effective. And put it bluntly, my complaint, you see, was, Dr. McIntosh, I don't have any authority to do these things. His summation was, I can't delegate authority I don't have. No, I had to agree. I had to shut up at this point. So I was always then in a position of doing things. At any point, I might get my head chopped off. Because if he had no authority, I had no authority either, you see. I'd never been delegated any authority to do these things. But we worked together, I think, rather effectively. His manner of working, sometimes it's disagreement. I mean, I felt he should work directly with his administrative officers. Now, these would be the chairman of the divisions. We had a meeting every Tuesday morning to elicit their problems and to discuss their problems. Well, what had happened to me is that Dr. McIntosh would come in with a folder, a sizable folder, 2 inches thick, and would proceed to go through the matters in his folder, which had been reserved for this meeting, and then a response from the people who sat around the big table in the president's office. And in part, I suppose, I compensated for that by spending a great deal of my time outside of the office, and doing my work at spare time, weekends, but getting into committees. I was on every committee ex officio and attended and fully participated in raft of them, the curriculum committee, and became PEP, Educational Policies Committee. I participated fully in that as a member of the committee, recommending to the president, not to me, but to the president. What was then the old, probably one of the most, the most discussed committee, the retention, tenure, and appointment policy, and promotion committee, rat trap committee, as it was called. That I sat on in a very curious way for recommendations, tenure, and promotion up to the full professor. I was a member of the committee. No, I was separate from the committee, that's right. I have to remember this correctly. On the full professors, I was a member of the committee. We recommended directly to the president. We, that is, I as a member of the committee, recommended directly to the president. On
the one track system?
Yeah, the full professors, yeah. The others, lecturers, or, well, instructors to assistant professor, associate professor, they recommended to me. But we sat together. And tenure, they recommended to me, and I recommended to the president. And then if there were disagreement between the committee and myself, in these instances, we thrashed it out around the table. Then I would recommend, I was fine with them, you know, I'd recommend contrary to their wishes. But we'd have argued these out, and I'd stated my position, they'd stated their position. Then we went to the president, stated our positions over again. The president then would decide. And he decided with them, and he decided with me. I mean, more with me than with them, but that is purely the sorts of things, because they were much more sympathetic to this, that, and the other. Anyway, those are two of the committees that, well, the budget committee I sat on. I sat with the Honors Committee, I sat with the General Education Committee. I don't remember all the committees. I would go on here and there and everywhere. But it had a certain effect that they knew I was busy and I was out on the campus and available to anyone. My door was open. While they had to make appointments to be sure that I'd be in the office, I'd point this direction toward the front shed, as it was called, because our offices were up where education is now. Nevertheless, it was available. I was out on the campus and made a practice of going to the chart room regularly. I don't eat much lunch, but didn't then either, but unless there were a meeting at noon, we'd go to the chart room and sit with faculty and discuss and available to them first name basis. It was an interesting time.
Yeah, was there still a teacher? Yeah, there was still a teacher's lounge, a faculty lounge.
A faculty lounge of sorts in what is FO2 or now business administration. Very few went there. I mean, this turned out to be one of the things, because it was eventually turned over as an office. I guess now is now again a lounge for faculty. Is it gone?
I don't know what it is.
I think it is a lounge again for faculty.
Something in the past.
Yeah. But it's a lounge now only for business administration. Yeah. There's another thing. There was some involvement in development of a faculty club. And when they started planning the student union to try to build in a faculty club within the student union, similar to what is true of other places, in particular what I remember so very well, was Minnesota. The student union had faculty dining room, faculty lounge, library. And this was sort of the intent. We worked on it. Faculty did not support that, because it did require an annual payment, which would be fairly heavy, because the minimum would have to be about $40 a year, $40 to $50 a year, go up from there, according to rank, in order to maintain it. Not to pay for it, I mean, the quarters would be built in, they would not have to be paid for, but just the expenses, the lounge, dining facilities would have to be paid for.
Are there any other great events that occurred during your period as dean of college that I should ask you about?
I suppose in terms of these things, we've covered most of them, I believe, the negative as well as the positive.
I thought of a positive when you talked about how there was a mandate from the trustees about research. And would you consider the bringing of Dr. Cox to this campus as a positive response to that?
That's why he was brought. As a matter of fact, you see, he was preceded by Dodson.
Oh.
And Cox was then brought in shortly after, and then that position has been maintained in the administrative structure since. Yes, that was McIntosh's interpretation of the research aspect. He also, and see, in that I was only in a supportive role, very strongly in support of academic research of all kinds, and in particular the science area, which is heavy on that kind of thing. Though also both of us, and he in particular, McIntosh in particular, very supportive of the art department in terms of its creativity. But what's the difference? They needed support. They needed kilns, they needed equipment, they needed this, that, and the other thing. And I knew very well that I would have to support this in terms of what I had available, funds, equipment funds, or things of this sort. So I did, my own department complaining that they never got any funds. And I said, well, what do you want to use the funds for? I said, you don't have any research equipment. Well, we need a reader. So I said, okay, I'll get you a reader. And 2 weeks later, I came back with a proposal for a reader, which has been used, not extensively, but it sits in the library in the department. That old reader, printer, is one which I got them, with equipment funds on a trade-off proposition. Then they wanted... Well, I said, we never get any maps. Well, I said, you never request them. I said, you have to generate this request, and it would be available up to $1,500 for map money. So they came up with about $800 of map requests. So they said, well, I guess that's it. So they haven't requested any other funds, I guess. Well, that's not true, because I requested funds since I thought maps should be updated, new maps should be purchased. So we went through, I was in the committee of one handling the map requests. But that's the equipment support.
Did you work with the foundation in this respect?
No, because that was a... area which lay in Bryant's and McIntosh's room, and I was not asking for any more than I was handling, capable of handling, and this was one that went over them. And to put it rather succinctly, Dr. McIntosh asked whether I wished to be a member of the committee, the board eventually, the committee first thing, board, and I said, no, I said, your representative would be, I think, adequate for both of us in that respect. And that I don't have enough time and enough help within my own area. He was sympathetic on that score, but every time I tried to get another person to help in the front shed, the faculty howled, and the chancellor's office had limitations and approval. Go ahead.
I can't think of anything else.
Well, why don't we, it's about 20 minutes out, one, why don't we just let it go? I assume it might mentally re-examine the stuff. There might be new areas that you would want to explore. And I'm available, so don't feel that you're intruding on my time.